The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Greetings from RTHQ. I'm Trevor Dan. In a minute, as usual, David Lloyd's Radio Moments, and we'll catch up with the news from Roy Martin. We've got Ollie Mann on the show this week as well, talking about being the new kid on the block at LBC, doing overnights. But first, let's talk to Matt Deegan, blogger and pundit and owner and manager of Fun Kids Radio. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking to Andy Carter, ex of GMG, and the subject came up, as it often does, about whether commercial radio is investing enough in content. And listening to it, Matt tweeted that he thought perhaps radio stations should spend more money, not always on content, but on marketing, telling people that they're out there. So we thought we'd get him on the line now. Matt, what the hell were you on about?
I just think sometimes everyone goes, oh, if we only spent more money on content, then we'd be in a better place. And look, the BBC spends £500 million on radio content. If only commercial radio did a better job, it would be amazing. And I just think that's a bit naive. I mean, we know from working with lots of people who are doing startup radio stations, and with Fun Kids itself, you know, clearly you need a decent product. And there's a scale of how much you invest in that. There's being kind of good, very good, or excellent. And sometimes, you know, being good and very good actually is good enough. And rather than spend £60,000 to get up to excellent, if you spend £60,000 on marketing your service, you'd actually have some listeners. So you have to demonstrate the fact that you exist for people to bother to listen to you in the first place. And I think some of this thinking kind of comes from the old days. You know, you launch a radio station in the 90s on FM, it was a big deal. And people would tune in because there wasn't much on FM. There's so much media choice now. The chance of kind of breaking through and cutting through, it's so difficult. I think it's sort of naive to just think, well, hey, if I build it, they will come.
There's a balance to be struck, though, isn't there, Matt? Because unless you've got some content that you can market, then there's no point in talking about your radio station at all. You know, what's the profile of it if you can't draw people's attention to the service it provides?
Oh, I don't disagree with that at all. You've got to have a decent product that when they sample it, they continue to listen to it. But I think sometimes radio stations, and particularly startup radio stations, there is this assumption that, oh, if I do a great job, people will stumble across me and find me. And actually, the answer in today's really busy world is that that's not going to happen. And if you're particularly if you're new, you need to spend almost as much time as you do on content creation as you do on marketing.
So I don't expect you to divulge your marketing budget, but if you were giving advice to a small, perhaps even a startup radio station, how much money should they put aside for their marketing budget?
Well, point about money, I don't think it is the be all and end all. I think it's about effort. So as an example with Fun Kids, you know, Fun Kids is a small radio station, and the biggest issue we face is awareness. You know, our product's all right, it's won some awards, it's done okay, people seem to like it. But our biggest issue is constantly driving awareness. And this is a product that's been around in the market for at least 5 years. So the team here, and particularly Joe Friel in my office, will probably spend at least a third of his time working on activities that generate awareness for the radio station. And sometimes that's content related. So there's a big concert series called Young Voices where kids choirs get together and do a big about singing at the O2 and around the country. And we're going to broadcast one of those concerts on the radio station. And, you know, it'll be quite nice content. But the main reason we've done it is so that they tell all the people who are in those choirs that they can tune into Fun Kids and hear those concerts on the radio. And spending the time on that deal, which hasn't cost us any money, but has cost Jerry's time and meeting the people and agreeing all of those things, I think is a really worthwhile thing. And I think at radio stations, often that effort isn't really put in. They just think about what the output is.
I want to ask you about social. And before we get there, just a little story, bear with me. I was sitting in Broadcasting House this week, just minding my own business, checking some emails. And Brett Spencer from Radio 2 tapped me on the shoulder and said, hello. He said, I'm just going next door to this BBC Academy event about social networking. And we've got some speakers from all over other parts of the broadcasting empire. He said, do you want to come? So I said, yeah, OK, I'll come in. So I sat there for an hour as a non-member of the BBC, listening to a man from Global Radio talking about social networking, a guy who works for a lot of television programmes like I'm a Celebrity and X Factor and so on, and also the woman who runs social for BBC Three, the TV channel. And all of them were talking about how their entire job is to raise the profile of the programmes or the radio stations that they're working on by using Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all the other latest social media. And it made me wonder whether, in fact, that is now becoming the kind of default position for marketeers. You know, is it enough, therefore, Matt, this is a long rigmarole towards a question, is it therefore enough to say, I will raise the profile of my radio station just by working in social? Or do you really have to do things like, you know, advertise on buses and use, you know, the old 20th century methods?
I think it's a tool and it can do a job. I mean, some of those examples you gave, they work very aggressively to grow awareness of brands and programmes. I think particularly BBC One have done an amazing job over the past few months, and they've got a really good team working on stuff, all the Sherlock Lives bits and pieces and stuff around The Voice as well. You know, it isn't just sending out tweets. You know, it's creating campaigns that sit in those platforms that have got good chances of becoming viral. You know, having 600 followers of an account, a couple of thousand followers of an account with people that never interact with you, you're broadcasting, you're not really doing much more. The thing that's good about social is there's the chance of amplification. You know, you do stuff and it catches and it spreads. And you look at outside the industry, something like BuzzFeed. I mean, BuzzFeed is totally designed to be spread virally. You know, they do not expect people to come to the BuzzFeed homepage. They write their articles in ways in which people share them. And then they use social to amplify it and get those messages out there. So I think, you know, if you've got an excellent person who's got access to kind of good content, good stories, and can aggressively push things, then it's fine to do that. Yeah. That's not saying that bus backs don't work for awareness as well. It's just the right audience in the right place and how you can write a good creative for a bus or a good creative for social media that really catches.
One other thing, Matt, there's been a debate led by Mark Ramsey in the States about whether you should have your DJs tweeting. And somebody else has remarked recently that it's interesting, isn't it, now that when, let's say, your breakfast show host leaves your radio station to join your rival, he might be taking with him 100,000 Twitter followers, and maybe that's 100,000 listeners, or at the very least potential listeners, that you've lost because his listenership is now portable through his Twitter feed. Is that a big issue now, do you think, for stations?
Well, in some ways it's back to that awareness thing, isn't it? You know, actually, if presenter A leaves and goes to work for another radio station, actually what you're doing is able to tell a lot of people, hey, I've moved. To be honest, I think it's probably less of a big deal than people worry about. Saying that, though, you see that most radio stations now just have kind of station accounts and let presenters post on station accounts. I think that works well. BBC, you often see like news broadcasters have BBC in their Twitter handles, and I think they're going to more likely remain part of the media companies that start them up, and that's sensible as well. What's interesting is you can obviously change Facebook names a little bit now for Facebook fan pages. And there's a great example of one of the Southern Cross or stereo stations. They changed the breakfast show page from the old team to the new team, thus moving all the likes from the old team to the new one. And that can be quite dangerous because people get quite annoyed. Like, I didn't like this breakfast show, I liked the old one. And they did a really great first post where it was the new breakfast team kind of in a closet cleaner's cupboard. And it's made some reference to thanks to the old team for letting us have their old office. And it was just a nice way to start, to sort of say, hey, we know we've moved into your place, listeners, and we're going to try and get a relationship with you rather than just starting with a, hey, here's our amazing breakfast show and here's all of our features.
Matt, thank you very much, as always. Pleasure to hear your contribution to the debate. We'll see you very soon. That was Matt Deegan. This is the Radio Today programme. Ollie Mann coming up.
The Radio Today programme.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audio Boo. Sharing voices with the world.
The Radio Today programme.
It is the Radio Today programme. Look who I found. It's LBC's Ollie Mann. Ollie, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How exciting to hear myself introduced like that officially, Trevor. Last time you said it, it was so clandestine.
It was indeed. So we just wanted to catch up with you because you've taken on the overnights on LBC. It's your first regular solo radio show. Mm. It's taken you some time to get there.
Yeah, it has. I guess if you go back to the beginning of my podcast, Answer Me This, which I did with Helen Zaltzman, we started that in January 2007. So if you saw that purely as a trajectory for us to get our own radio show, which I suppose on some level we did see, then you'd say, yes, this has taken a while. But the truth is there's been other pit stops along the way, including shows that I've co-hosted with Helen, as you know, one you produced yourself for Five Live, and us having our own regular slot on Saturday edition on Five Live. And then I've been doing cover on LBC for 18 months. So yes, it's a very long withdrawal. Overnight success.
It's meant to drive you bonkers doing an overnight chat show, isn't it? You've done a few weeks as standing in for other people. What is the experience like?
I think it takes a while to get used to, and it takes a while to get used to what the audience want to talk about. And of course, LBC is all about finding out what people will call in about, as well as, you know, the subjects that work in terms of a listener. You know, you want to see the switchboard light up when you're talking. And of course, we all know the subjects that are going to do that guaranteed without much thinking. You know that if you talk about immigration or smacking, that's going to happen. But then it's finding the subjects that are those kind of in-between ones, that you want something that's about that morning's events. Especially overnight, that's quite difficult because you think about what's happening the next day, not really the day that's just been. But at the same time, you've got to be asking a question that someone, especially at that time of night, whatever type of frame of mind they're in, you know, and let's be honest, some of them have been drinking. You want to find out something that they're going to pick up the phone and talk to you about. And I think that's the skill, is finding those subjects.
The overnight call is usually characterised as being, as you say, somebody who's been out, or a taxi driver, or an insomniac, or an elderly person. I would imagine LBC would be interested in trying to get a younger audience than perhaps the traditional characterisation of an overnight listener.
Yeah, well, perhaps. I mean, that's maybe a question for them about why they've given me this job, but I'd like to think that's something I can bring is a younger audience, just through the fact that I've got a profile on Twitter and I have an audience who know me through the internet, and I sound younger than other presenters who have done the overnight show. But actually, what I really like about LBC in general, but about overnight in particular, is you have this really interesting mix of people listening. Yes, some of them are insomniac, you know, and you'll have an old woman who, you know, in the middle of the night is calling up to give you her recipe for chicken soup. But then also you'll have, I mean, I did something about money the other day. It was Fat Cat Wednesday, this day where supposedly, horrifically, everyone who's in charge of a FTSE 100 company by mid-morning on that day had made more money in 2014 than the average British worker earns in a year. And so I did a phone-in about money. And at 3:45 in the morning, I had a guy call up who obviously was worth quite a bit of money. He'd just come back from Thailand and retired from his job selling furniture to hotels. And he said he'd kitted out something like 2,000 hotels around Thailand and then given up his job because it was just too stressful. And now he fills his time by going for walks late at night and listening to LBC. So actually, there's quite a lot. And it's remarkable how you do get lawyers, doctors, teachers, nurses, as well as your obvious kind of widows and minicab drivers. And actually, it's that mix, that potent mix, I think, if you can tap into is... It's actually really fun, and I'm trying to shut up. You know, the skill is obviously filling the blank space, but I'm trying to stop talking when we get an interesting caller and really let them speak.
And how are you dealing with the overnights? How are you dealing with the studio equivalent of jet lag?
I'll be honest, when something technically goes wrong at 3 o'clock in the morning, it is harder to focus in a way that I imagine it would be if you were driving the desk at 6 p.m. It just is, because you do feel a bit like you're on an aeroplane, you know. But it's just a case of just changing your whole lifestyle when you wake up and when you go to sleep. And actually, what's nice is because so much in this country, our news agenda is still dictated by what's on the front of the morning papers. You know, like it or loathe it, that is the case. And I try and find stories online and whatever, but a lot of them come from what is the Sun and the Daily Mail talking about inevitably. Those are still breaking at midnight. So actually, when I go on air at 1 o'clock in the morning, I am talking about fresh news, even though it's something that technically was being reported upon the day before, of course, for it to be written and then published. I'm still saying, this is the story that London is waking up to. What do you think? And what's really special about LBC is that we're pretty much the only place still doing that at that time of night. And if you want to know something that feels like breaking news about issues that matters to people in London, that's where you can find it. And actually, yeah, I just hope to try and boost a bit of awareness about that.
Ollie, man, good luck. We wish you every success.
Thank you very much, Trevor.
Shall we have some radio news? I think we shall. Here's Roy.
Not good news for the Sunrise Group this week, as Sunrise Radio 1 and 3, plus Time 106.6 and Time 107.5 have all been placed into administration. There is good news, though, as all the company assets, including radio licenses and staff, have been sold to a new company. That new company is Sunrise Radio UK. So they're all going to carry on broadcasting as if nothing actually happened. Amazing. Global Radio have been told off for not including enough local speech content on Heart Cornwall this week by Ofcom. See our full report online and see this week's eRadio for considered opinion pieces on the matter. And the expected redundancies at Absolute Radio have started now that Bauer is in command. Radio Today understands around half the staff are now at risk, but as ever, the company line is that they do not talk about confidential staff issues. And that's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
uk-voiceover.com.
Audio production starting from £3.
uk-voiceover.com.
On Twitter at UK Voiceover.
The Radio Today programme.
Radio Moment.
Si García colocando la pelota, cobra pelota arriba, la bola cae, cae, golpe de cabeza.
Gol, 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 gol.
Football commentary is now commonplace, but in the early days of radio, it was tough to imagine you could even begin to bring the excitement home to the listener. After all, how would they know where the ball was? This week, in 1927, the first live football match was broadcast. It was a Division 1 clash between Arsenal and Sheffield United. Henry Wakelam commentated. As far as I know, no recordings still exist of that match, but here's another early one, and listen carefully to the quiet mentions of numbered squares. Those eight numbers, a great idea just to help you work out where on the pitch the ball was.
Referee stopped them playing. For some reason, Brooks has got the ball.
Oh.
Running eagerly, hoping for the consolation of a goal. There's Cowan fighting there hard. Ball's gone to Johnson. Johnson across the field where it goes to Tozlin. Tozlin taps it through to Marshall. Marshall back to Tozlin.
One.
Criswell's there, but Tozlin's put the ball on Criswell's feet. No doubt, no doubt.
Wonderful stuff. And by the way, that first ever match broadcast this week in 1927 ended in a draw. As 1975 kicked off, the first swathe of commercial radio stations was well underway. And this week, Scotland got its second station.
A station that we can guide and shape. A station in which everyone can play an important role. A station that will listen as often as it speaks. Radio 4th belongs to us all, and it will be as strong and successful as we allow it to be. A dream is about to come true, because this, for the very first time, is Radio 4th.
The opening of Radio 4th this week in 1975. And after a year on air, Radio 4th had a 47% weekly reach. Mind you, Radio 1 had a 53% reach. In the 1950s, there was very little pop music radio around until the advent of Radio Luxembourg. And this week in 1951, the first English programmes arrived on 208 metres.
Colourful Radio Luxembourg.
Radio Luxembourg Experimental. Geoffrey Everett and Pete Murray were on air.
They had this particular channel, and they thought that this would be more profitable. You see, the point is that Radio Luxembourg on the longwave band was predominantly French, and the only hours we had were the ones that were when the French didn't want them. So we used to work from 7 o'clock in the evening to 1 o'clock in the morning every day of the week, and the rest of the time was taken by either Flemish or Luxembourg programme, some German as well. So we were very international.
Pete Murray. The BBC in the 50s rose to the pop music challenge with one show called Saturday Club, hosted by Brian Matthew. And that programme ended this week, 45 years ago.
Oh, there it was, one more time. The record which filled our most requested spot for a record run of about 6 weeks, a long time ago. Well, there it is, and we sincerely hope you enjoyed hearing all the stars and enjoyed the show. Once again, thank you all for the very kind good wishes you sent to us. And let's hope that you'll join us again next week when the bill isn't at all bad. Now, just listen, we've got Roy Orbison with us, The Searchers, Susan Morn, the Viscounts.
Saturday Club, which ended this week in 1969 after 11 years. BBC local radio came to Coventry a little later than most cities. CWR came on air this week in 1990. So by then, the commercial competition was already in place.
Commercial radio has had a fair degree of success in big cities. And I think that that means that get the product right, and I don't accept that only a commercial product is right, get the product right and you'll get the response. They can find us on the FM waveband on 94.8 and 103.7, and we hope that the excellent quality stereo that we offer will be an attraction. But of course, one's got to be realistic. It is an added difficulty opening a BBC local radio station in an area which has been nicely served by commercial radio for a number of years. The number of FM radio sets in this country is increasing steadily.
CWR. 14 minutes past 7 o'clock, Neil Pringle here on The Breakfast Show.
CWR launching this week in 1990, only on FM, and it was later to disappear before reappearing. It's exactly 20 years this week since radio lost this voice.
Incidentally, let me interrupt you. We are just beginning to get reports that a van has exploded in Whitehall, but whether this is an accident or something more sinister, we do not know yet, but we will tell you as soon as we hear more.
Brian Redhead, former Guardian editor who died this week in 94, aged 64. He'd been on the Today programme from 1975 to 1993. Some breakfast shows last just months or maybe a year or two, others stay the course. It's now 8 years since Christine O'Connell made his breakfast debut on what was then Virgin Radio.
Listen, what do I have to do, Richard, then, to get, you know, to the Men Commandments is an important book for us guys and confused men. How do I get Book of the Month status? Because that's how I'm going to make this book really sell.
Money.
What would it cost me?
Christine O'Connell. So with Steve Orchard just missing out on the GCAP chief executive post this week 6 years ago, Radio 1 announcing JK and Joel's arrival from Key 10 years ago, and also exactly 10 years since GWR chairman Ralph Bernard called on government to set a switch-off date for analogue radio, those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments!
Thanks, David. And now back to square one, as those old football commentators used to say. We're grateful this week to Matt Deegan and Ollie Mann for their contributions, to all our advertisers and sponsors, and of course to you for listening. I'm Trevor at trevordan.com. This has been a TDC production, and we'll have more from the Radio Today programme next week. Ta-da!